This episode, we welcome Tristan Gilbert to the Sanity Lounge studio. Tristan is a seasoned drummer known for his exceptional style and versatility across various musical genres. With a passion for rhythm that ignited at an early age, Tristan has honed his craft through the years of dedication and performance. Throughout his career, he has been a prominent figure in the music scene, contributing his dynamic drumming skills to numerous bands across different styles, including rock, jazz, funk, and fusion. His ability to adapt to a diverse musical environment while infusing his own unique flair has earned him recognition among both fellow musicians and audiences alike. Tristan continues to leave his mark on the world of drumming. His dedication to his craft combined with his innate talent and unmistakable style ensures that his influence will be felt in the music industry for years to come. Join us as we discuss current and future projects, and stick around after the show for our segment, Live at the Lounge, featuring Tristan on the drums. So, here we are. Welcome to Sanity Lounge. We have a special guest in here today. We have Tristan Gilbert from Lowercase Blues and Sweet Lita in here to do a deep conversation
on history, his history, drums, and whatever he wants to talk about, the projects.
Right. Get into some film.
Right. Now, first of all, Tristan, we've never met until about, 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And full disclosure, I get my local music talk, if you will, from Woe Davis and his wife. Now, I play in an 80s cover band. And
which is fantastic.
Which is a great fun thing, but we're always playing. And so I'm not in the scene as much as I would love to be.
Right, yeah.
And they are. So he's been telling me about you for a minute.
And yeah, he's at every show.
I know.
All the bands.
I know, dude.
All the bands I play with, he's at every show.
I know.
It's wild.
I know. Well, he's always been like that. And that's what part of the show, the reason why he's part of the project is because, the Davises, I've known him since 1992. And, yep. They go out and see live music. They're live music supporters. Yeah. I'm a live music player. I'm a drummer and everything like that. But the impetus for the show is partially my love of drums and his love of live music. The point of all this is to say that I started deep diving Tristan Gilbert style, right? And I'm so happy. First of all, let me ask you this.
I don't know if you understand how happy we are of what we found.
Yeah, listen, right. So,
oh
so,
2020 was a weird year for everybody. Right?
I know. But dig this. So wait.
Well, some of these go back 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
Before I get ahead of myself, which I already have, it is a pleasure to meet you. Yeah. And I think you're a dynamite player.
Oh, thank you.
And I mean that. And Lowercase Blues. I listened to some live Lowercase Blues. Dude.
Yeah, that band is unbelievable.
The taste of
awesome.
Your swing, like your sauce is so
You guys amazing. Just had a nice little tour in Florida.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, is drums your main instrument?
Yeah, for sure.
And what's the history there, if you don't mind?
Well, the history is my parents were very tolerant people. Shout out to Steve and Marty. They put up with just an ungodly amount of noise when I was a kid. I got really fascinated with the drums in probably like sixth or seventh grade.
What year?
This would have been 92, 93, I think. Whoa.
Trying to figure out how old he is.
Yeah. I'm 41 now.
That's not, yeah.
I didn't know if you were trying to do math.
No, well, I don't. There was no math.
Especially for drummers.
Right?
Math is tough.
I was to
it's not divisible by four. We're screwed.
Sure.
Nice.
So in like early middle school or so, my parents took myself and my brother into Baltimore. I grew up in Carroll County. And we saw the stage show Stomp. Remember Stomp in the 90s?
Yeah.
Very rhythmic.
Yeah, it was everything was drums. Right. So it was trash cans, it was all these found objects that were drums. And I was like, I don't have any drums, but I can make anything a drum. And so shortly thereafter, I began assembling and building a drum set at my parents' basement. And it was made up of Tupperware containers lids off of my mom's pots and pans. And I didn't have drumsticks, so I found some knitting needles my mom had. And it just kind of kept growing. And I kept like reading about drums and learning more about them. And I built like a foot pedal that like I could start playing with my feet too.
Nice.
And at some point my parents were sort of like, I think he's kind of serious about this. Maybe we should get him a drum set.
That's awesome.
And they bought me a drum set for Christmas in like seventh grade.
Well, and he just like a Talon five piece.
It was a Max Tone.
Nice.
I think one of those like cheap Japanese kids.
Yeah, I love asking the early drum sets because the names are always so great.
Yeah, and it was great. I mean, it was an absolute dream come true. And I was probably one of the only kids that they get their first drum set and I could play beats because I had just been like playing on this weird drum set that I made. And yeah, that's sort of where it all started.
You said you grew up in Carroll County. Where
yeah,
did you
yeah.
grow up in Carroll County?
I grew up in Finksburg, but I went to Westminster High.
So did
we. Yeah. Right off of Deer Park Road, the other end.
We graduated in 93 from Westminster.
Okay.
My parents still live in Finksburg.
Yeah, that's fine. My parents are right off of Deer Park Road.
That's
in
wild.
Finksburg.
Wow.
It's such a small
what
world.
What a small
man.
World.
Such a small world.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not far from there, but it's still a small world.
Yeah, really. So what, and then from there, did you have, like at that point, you weren't taking lessons proper. This was just you kind of feeling it out.
Yeah.
You just had that in you that you could make it work.
Yeah. And it's not a great way to learn how to play drums.
I know. I relate to it.
Yeah. It's a really hard way to try to like figure
it's
it
backwards.
Out. Yeah. But I still have never taken drum lessons.
Right. It gives you the fire. It gives you the fire to look into.
And I have all kinds of like issues because I never took drum lessons.
Sure.
And my approach to drums is like very bizarre and skewed in the eyes of the drummers that have taken lessons.
Sure, sure.
But I figured a lot of stuff out on my own. And I also like kind of ended up developing my own voice that way. So, you know, it's sort of a trade-off.
Well, I got that from you, but I got that you're one of those unique, quirky players just by watching. And, you know, first of all, you're nasty. I mean, like I said, I'm not just saying that. Like, you know, he's got this video of you.
Oh yeah,
slamming.
I have the 8.5 minute video of you and Ricky at Cat's Eye back in like December,
slamming.
where you just get up and he gets down and
that
you
was
get,
that was so much fun.
I have that entire sequence.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. I'd love to revisit that.
That was great.
A fun time.
Right,
yeah,
that was a great.
But
job.
Like
yeah.
uniqueness is what I love, and actually, like I have the same kind of history, self taught, bad habits. I try to correct them. You look into it and stuff like that. But it does make it a unique voice, you know, and I love that.
I know you're. So what we were talking about earlier, we found your YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, full disclosure, my top three bands of all time is Steely Dan, Frank Zappa, and Phish.
So during the Top Gun, which is fantastic, by the way. There's a little portrait of Frank Zappa in the background.
Yeah. That was a gift to me. Someone had that commissioned. That was a hand drawn.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah, that's
cool.
It's incredible. Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah. So disclaimer on a lot of those like goofy like solo videos on. So I have like a Snapchat group with my like close friends. Mm-hmm. We'd all get on a phone call together and you know just catch up. Share some beers, drink some whiskey and you know, talk music and everything else. And so I started just taking it upon myself to sort of entertain myself and the group. And it just snowballed because I had time. I was at home all the time.
Sure.
And I have a history of I worked as a graphic designer and a videographer and photographer and all these things. So I have all these other skills that I can.
Right.
So I was like, well, I'm at home. Why don't I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to set all this stuff up. And then I just started making those videos.
Dude, it's incredible.
They started off like really rudimentary and they got better and better and better.
Well, so imagine my surprise as, you know, 2 days ago, again, I've never met you. And 2 days ago, he's like, hey, Tristan's going to come on. And I'm like, nice. And I'm like, well, shit, I got to start really like looking into it because I know you from him and the videos and the little, you know, but. And so I look into it and goddamn 46 days from Phish is the first thing I see.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
he sends me, so is this him? I'm like, yes.
I'm like, well, this guy's playing the guitar. Is this,
So you're a multi-instrumentalist.
Yeah. I the drums are the thing. The drums are what I get paid for.
Right. Sure.
You know, and then I really enjoy playing guitar. When I went away to college, I couldn't really take my drums with me to the dorm. And so I was like, just going absolutely nuts, not having a musical outlet.
Right. Right.
And so I ended up buying like a cheap, like $30 guitar that was not even playable off of eBay, and like taught myself some chords.
Good for you.
And then I got like a nicer guitar, like a little bit later that year. And just really just, I just did that for like 3 years, just played guitar.
Well, I got to tell you, you play well. I mean, you know, like we're looking at these videos and I'm like, man, this guy, like, cause you're right. I mean, production wise, you got the whole package. Like, you've got the videoing down, you've got the playing down, you've got, you know, like, it all looks great. It sounds great.
Yeah. And,
you know,
so that's awesome.
I had,
like,
to do
I said, like, the Top Gun was,
and, yeah, the Top Gun one was pretty
cool. Come Down, the Anderson Pack was,
that oh,
was
yeah, yeah,
that was cool. Really sick.
Yeah, that was cool.
Oh, yeah.
All of my buds love Pack, and I mean, he's just so good.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Well, the other thing, too, is like, I love the Tiny Desk series.
Yeah, I'm so
and it's just like my favorite thing mm-hmm. on YouTube, and the Anderson Pack Tiny Desk is,
dude,
oh, it is
that,
phenomenal.
Yeah. You know, the Mac Miller Tiny Desk was incredible.
It is so good. I got that on. They released it on vinyl. The
really?
Audio of it, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a nice
dude.
Thing.
Yeah,
nice
that's thing that's
Cypress Hill's been recent too. That was badass. That was,
oh, and, really? Tiny Desk?
Oh yeah.
Nice.
And Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang, yeah.
Wow, that was crowded. I was gonna say that had to be crowded.
Great, yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a crowded spot because I mean, they don't show the crowd often, but they have, and I mean, you're in there, but I'd love to get it. I mean, it's right in D.C. I'd love to get on
right down the street.
So early years when you get your first drum set, your parents are putting up with it, and you're teaching yourself the ropes. What are your early influences band wise?
The biggest influence for me at that time was Dave Matthews Band.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Nice. Yeah. Carter Beauford was my guy.
Oh my gosh.
And just when I got into that band, it was largely because I never heard drums like that. And it was, I mean, I was exposed to, you know, I'm a child of the 90s. I'm listening to grunge, and I'm listening, and sort of like this alt rock thing was sort of the answer to grunge of like, oh, we're going to have a violin and a saxophone in our band. We're going to be as least grungy as we can be. And I was fascinated by the instrumentation. I was fascinated by, you know, just the sound of that band, but it was really the drums that captured me. And I was listening to them as the main instrument. And yeah, his influence was I just was like, I'm going to learn every single Dave Matthews song on drums, which is also a stupid idea.
Which is a tough order.
So hard. There's so many things in odd time. There's so many things with weird, like really difficult, like syncopated grooves and stuff. And I didn't know anything. I was just listening. Right. But through those exercises of just like listening intently to like what was going on, it made me a better player later.
Right. A lot of drummers take that for granted. It's the job, really.
Yeah, is absolutely.
Listen.
Yeah.
You know,
if you're not listening, you're not playing.
Yeah. A lot of drummers take that for granted. It is, it's good that you develop that, you know, skill. And
yeah. It happened early on. And I was really lucky. Like, I grew up in a house that was full of music. So my mom and my dad both had, like, you know, Sundays were always like the day, like my dad would put on, like, he had like really nice stereo at the house. Nice. And I mean, he would crank it and we'd listen to records. We'd listen to stuff my mom liked. We'd listen to stuff my dad liked. And there was some overlap there, but you know, I grew up listening to, you know, Zeppelin and Sabbath and some Steely Dan here and there. And then my mom was really into singer-songwriter stuff. So it was like James Taylor Cat Stevens and Simon and Garfunkel and, you know, Carly Simon and, you know, all these kind of things. She really liked the Pointer Sisters. I remember that. Like, so there was like some disco stuff going on. And soulful
I always
stuff
remember
and
listening to my dad's Blondie 8-track over and over over.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but I got, and Pink Floyd and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I listened to all that stuff when I was a kid. And then my dad also loved the blues. And so there was Muddy Waters, there was Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I was going to ask you, you have to have some kind of an influence because your swing is so natural.
Yeah, there was a lot of blues. And so much of the music we listen to, you know, Zeppelin and stuff, is all blues-based anyway.
Sure.
So, like, that was such a fundamental foundation. So that stuff was all there. It was a lot. We listened to a lot of Stevie Ray Vaughan.
That's
I remember
awesome
that so much. And And it was so much of a joy when we put it on, you know.
It's that communal thing that only music can pull off.
Exactly.
At an early age, you're figuring it out, even with family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's good shit.
Yeah. And listen to, you know, listening to like Chris Layton play drums, you know, and like his shuffle is just, it's incredible.
Well, that's why I say, I mean, not to keep like stroking you, but I'm listening to this damn, pardon the expression, I'm listening to this damn...
Single stroke or double stroke.
Right, don't get me wrong, you know. Lowercase Blues this live, and, you know, there is a touch that you have to have, and you've got it with these shuffles that you're doing, you know? And it's like everybody has a nice touch. If you're a blues player, you have to have it. But yours is effortless, and it shows.
It wasn't effortless for a long time. It actually took a long time to figure it out.
I know that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's really paid off.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. The shuffle is, it's a tricky thing, because I always had a feel for it, but I didn't have the technique to play it that well. I could really swing and shuffle with the right hand, but my left hand was always so weak. It really took a lot of practice to get the left hand to do what I wanted to do.
We have a lot in common in that, in that my early years was drugs and bad habits. That's it. Literally.
It's
half right. Right. But the fact is that you're right. Like once that left hand gets backed up, it takes focused work
years to
correct it. And you know, you got to have true grit and love for the instrument. And I can tell you do. I mean, it shows in your play.
Yeah, and it really helps to play with great players. I mean, the boys in Lowercase, and BJ, they're just
BJ
monsters.
Is nasty. Like, seeing him and Jamie at the same shows, it's kind of like...
Explain who... So BJ is the bass?
He's the bass
and
vocals
singer.
For Lowercase, and Jamie is the bass player for Sweet Lita.
Yeah.
Well, the band Lowercase Blues was slamming I heard. Like, so they're all, you know, you guys are all incredible.
So those
guys
have been around for like 20 years almost. Have you been with them the whole time?
No. So we have a fascinating story. So I met those guys about 15 years ago. I was in Rehoboth for vacation. They're based out of Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. Mm-hmm. And they used to do this open blues jam at the Frog Pond right off of the beach on Sundays. And I happened to be there and I was walking by. They had a sandwich board out in front, said Lowercase Blues Jam tonight. And I was like, man, I've heard of that band, you know, like I want to go check that out. So I went back later that night and it was sort of a rotating cast of musicians. Like anybody that wanted to sit in could sit in, and there was a drum set. And so I was like, yeah, I play some drums. Like that'd be cool to, you know, sit in. And they were like, you know, BJ was like, yeah, man, come on, that's cool, whatever. And I sat down and he's like, I was like, what do you guys want to do? And he's like, oh, man, just kick a shuffle, man, let's go. And so, you know, count off a shuffle and we play a shuffle. And then he's like, all right, play something a little funky. So we play something a little funky. And he's like, let's do a slow blues, you know, just like the standard
stuff. Right, right,
right. You know? And we ended up doing, I don't know, 5 or 6 songs. And not once did we ever look at each other, cue each other. It was just
magic.
It was as if we had been playing together for years. We finished playing and BJ was like, man, who the hell are you?
That's so funny.
You know?
That's
and
awesome.
I was like, who the hell are you guys? You know, what is this? What is
like,
going
what
on?
The
you know?
Fuck is going on?
Where have you guys been? You
that's
know?
Awesome.
And it was so amazing. And so I talked with BJ, I talked with Jake, and their original drummer, this guy named Paul, he had just left and moved to California.
Wow.
And so they had been kind of rotating through drummers. I had just been laid off from my job. So I was like in between jobs and they were like, hey man, like where are you from? I was like, I'm from Baltimore. They're like, ah, that sucks. We're out here, you know, like, but we play in Baltimore. Like, can we call you for a gig? And I was like, yeah, sure, man. So I gave them my number, whatever. We leave and I figured I'd never hear from them again. Like 2 days later, Jake calls me. He's like, hey man, we're playing Cat's Eye in Baltimore like next week. You want to do the gig? And I was like, sure, I guess. Like, I was like, what's the deal with the gig? You know, like, it's like, you know, it's a 3-hour gig. Like, here's show up 9:30, whatever. We'll see you there. Okay. All right. So the next time I saw them, we took the stage at Cat's Eye.
Wow.
No rehearsal, nothing. No discussion of what the song list was.
Holy shit.
Nothing at all.
That's
and
incredible.
We played, we never took a break. in for any set. We played straight through like 3 straight hours.
Incredible. Awesome. And everybody there was like, "You guys, how long have you guys been together?"
It was unreal.
15 years ago.
This was 15 years ago.
That's wild.
Yeah, and we played, and there was, I mean, there were some longtime fans that had been seeing the band for a long time, had never seen me before.
Right.
And
right.
like it was hilarious too, because like I didn't know the guys, and like I'm figuring I'm showing up for a show. I show up with like collared shirt and like my khaki pants on, you know. Right. Like I look like an idiot. You know, these guys are wearing like torn up jeans and black t-shirts.
Sure, sure.
A blues band. Yeah, of course. And but it was hilarious. I remember one guy came up to me, he goes, "You don't look like the rest of these guys, but you sound like them."
That's like, awesome.
Thanks.
That's a good compliment. That's a great compliment. Yeah, that's
you weren't wearing your sequins jackets back then?
No, no sequin jacket at that point.
And your zebra shirts?
Yeah, no, I did.
Dude, I love Amanda wanted me to ask you about the outfits because she absolutely loves them, but wants to know where you get all that
shit
from.
That's a relatively new thing. I started doing some crazy outfits because when I play with Sweet Lita, Omar, the guitar player in Sweet Lita, is always just the sharpest dressed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, he's got the vest, he's got layers, he's got rings, he's got, you know, the hat is always, he's always looking so good. And I was like, man, I got to outdo this guy somehow.
Right.
And so, like, it's been kind of a back and forth of, like, what
I study Omar
stuff.
At Cat's Eye because you're like basically standing right next to him. So yeah. I look at everything that he's going on.
He's the most unique and interesting guitar player I've ever played.
He's incredible.
With. He's so amazing.
Well, and so that's Sweet Lita.
That's Sweet Lita.
Okay, yeah. So let me, not to interrupt, but, you know, on that note, are you on the album, the 2023 album?
No. I'm not on any of the recorded stuff with Lita. Yeah.
Okay. So now I've only listened to the album and I've listened to the videos he sent me, but I love that band too.
Yeah, that band's great.
Now, what's the story with that band? Have you...
God, Julie's such a powerhouse.
She's amazing.
God.
Yeah, Julie.
Yeah, I mean, they're all
and Jamie.
Incredible.
Like I said, like, BJ and Jamie. Like so Cult Classic. We were there on New Year's.
Yeah.
So I got to see both of them, and then I got to see them on the
BJ
same.
BJ and Jamie is the
so Jamie's bass, Sweet Lita. Okay. BJ's bass and vocals for Lowercase.
Keep me in the audience abreast of what we're going on.
So I saw, we saw Lowercase, then we saw Sweet Lita. And then I got to see BJ and Jamie on stage together.
Nice. So it was like an all-star jam.
Oh, dude. Yeah,
it's great.
That's fun.
Cult on New Year's Eve was fantastic. Yeah. I remember all of it, but I had like one eye around that place for a while, dude.
Right.
Like we had, because the Ravens game was on earlier that day. So we were at the Jetty.
Oh, we stayed there.
We got a hotel in Kent Island, stayed at the Jetty, drank all day, and then went to New Year's at Cult Classic to see Sweet Lita and Lowercase Blues with Kevin and Mara from Fort Lauderdale. And those
two.
I
feel like I remember there being a text from Woe Davis that night of alarming, like, you had a great night.
Yeah. So they, So, yeah, back to Sweet Lita.
Well, no, yeah, I just so tell me a little bit about the history there. You know.
So, when I played with Lowercase Blues the very first time 15 years ago,
you stumbled right into this band too, I'm going to shit my pants.
I think you did.
Go.
So here's how this all went down. We got asked to play one of the early Hot August music festivals when it was still the Hot August Blues.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We were there. Early. Well, I don't know if we were there. Well, continue.
Yeah. So this was, I don't remember the exact year, but it was the year that Tedeschi Trucks Band was the headliner. Okay. This was at Oregon Ridge Park.
Yeah, I don't think we were for that one.
And they brought us in, and they had two stages. They had like the pavilion stage off the side, and they were having like that show was in between the main stage stuff. So there was just constant music all day. And they had us on the side stage right before Tedeschi Trucks Band.
Mm-hmm.
And so we played for just this massive audience.
I bet.
I mean, it was the whole crowd as soon as we started, because they're all there to see a big blues band.
Sure, sure.
And as soon as we started, it was like, you know, moths to the flame. Like, it just was crazy. It filled in so fast.
Along that hill, right?
Yeah.
That
and it was just people as far as I could see. It was awesome. We had a great set. But we were also asked to host a jam night at the Green Turtle in Hunt Valley afterwards. And so anybody that had like a musicians pass from the day could come over and sit in with our band. We'd set up our gear and then
Nice.
So we went over there and you know the promoters all like, oh, you never know who's going to show up. You know, Susan might be there,
right,
this kind of thing. But you know, Julie and Jamie showed up,
right,
and Don Boy and I don't know if Omar was there. Omar may have been there, but they showed up and they jammed with us like all night. It was awesome. So we met them that night. And just had the most amazing time and just became lifelong friends from that point.
Right.
The next time that Sweet Lita ran back into Lowercase was like 2 or 3 years later. Paul, the original drummer for Lowercase, had come back and I had started a career. So I had exited and Lowercase, Jake called me up and said, hey, man, Paul just quit the band again. Do you want to start playing some shows? And I was like, absolutely. This would be great. And I went down, I played at the Pond in Rehoboth. And at the end of the show, I went outside and here walks Julie and Jamie up to come hang out and see the band. And I start talking to them and they go, our drummer just quit too.
Damn.
And so I was like, well, I live in Baltimore. I'm pretty close. Like we should probably talk. That would be really cool. You want to come over and jam sometime? And so went over to their house and we jammed on some Sweet Lita tunes and that was it.
And that's 2020.
That was 2020.
Yep. Nice.
So I started playing with both of those bands again. Yeah, pretty much.
And you guys share bills together.
Yeah, fairly often.
Yeah,
we do. We try not to do it too often. We still want to keep it, you know, special for everybody.
Sure.
But yeah, it's usually about 3-4 times a year we'll do. We just did one down in Rehoboth, actually.
That's got to be a fun Friday. Night for you in particular. Just
it's a lot I mean, of work.
It's a long night.
It's a long night, but it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's got to be
it's
fun.
It's a lot of fun. And
well,
it's,
that goes back to our conversation of do you get tired?
You know, my other background was I was a long-distance runner in college. And so I do maintain a pretty good stamina.
Right.
With that, I'm pretty well conditioned for longevity.
Long distance run. That was my old career. Just kidding.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one of the great pleasures of my life, and maybe my favorite musical moment of all time was the first time I did the cult classic gig with Lowercase and Sweet Lita. We had Ricky Wise on the gig too.
Mm-hmm.
And so we both set our drum sets up.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
and
man,
we had a couple songs where we were both on the stage playing together. And then we both got to do like a full on like drum duel.
Oh, my gosh.
And
that was so fun.
Oh, man, that was fun.
That's so fun.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, because he's just a fun player. You know, he's an incredible player.
Yeah.
And you know, some drummers are dicks, but he's not.
Ricky's when you have drummers
that aren't dicks and they, you know,
yeah.
It's wonderful.
Ricky's one of my best friends downtown.
Yeah,
and
man.
I love him tremendously and he's a joy in every situation.
Yeah. I mean, I go down to the woodshed as much as I possibly can.
It's incredible.
I've been the last 2 months. I've only missed two so far this year, even though we're 3 months in. A Scribe was in February, which was great.
Yeah.
And the Rachel Hall band was this past month. Joey Harcum was January, but I didn't get to that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was out
and
of
you
town.
Guys have played there. I mean, Sweet Lita, were you with them when they played there?
They did that gig with Laura Cerulli from Mama's Black Sheep.
Okay, cool.
Because they try not to do like the full drum set thing there as much as they can.
Yeah, that's true. Right.
And she does kind of like, she's a fantastic drummer, an amazing singer as well. Mm-hmm. But she plays like a hybrid kind of kit. Where she's got like a djembe, she's got like a little like 12-inch snare that she plays and a little 18-inch kick. And, you know, she does a lot of stuff like hand drumming while she's like, you know.
So she's got her own vibe.
Got her whole own thing. And it works so well. And that was a really cool show. I was at the show, but I wasn't playing in the show.
Right,
that's
right,
awesome.
Right. That is awesome.
Yeah. Lita's got a rotating cast of drummers right now. I'm sort of the main drummer for the band. But yeah, we kind of rotate between a few people. Ricky,
yeah, the last two, we went down the Cult Classic with Kelly Bell Show. So that was Ricky.
Yeah,
and
Ricky
then
was
we
on that
saw
gig.
Them at Cat's Eye with Ricky right before
now,
that.
Tristan, he said that you were touring Florida with Lowercase.
Yeah.
So that's fun as shit. What's up with that?
It was great. So those guys have been doing that now for like 6 years. I've done the last two with them. And it's wild. Like, first of all, you know, Florida, a lot of old people, a lot of blues fans.
Blues. Right? We lived in Florida for 6 years.
And so there's a ton of places to play down there where people are really, really into it.
Right.
A lot of people with a lot of money, a lot of retirement money. Happy to give it to us. That's nice.
So there's happy to take it. There's two places down there that I you played at that I have to ask you about. One's the Funky Biscuit.
Yeah.
How was that?
That was great. So we did the Funky Biscuit last year. They put us in for like a blues jam night. We did like a 45-minute set, and it went really well. Mm-hmm. And then this year they put us down with another band, and we did like an opening slot, played like an hour and a half set, and we sold the venue out.
That's awesome.
It was awesome, and it was a great show. And the other band was really fantastic. Young guy, you know, playing blues, and they were sort of a little bit more local down in the area. But I kind of felt bad because there were so many people there to see us. Like by the time they were like midway through their set, the venue was like empty.
Right.
And so the general manager was there, and he was like, "Yeah, we're gonna have you guys back."
Yeah, that's good.
Guys on the top.
That's really good. Yeah.
So, but that room was amazing. And it sounds so good there. The sound guy was incredible. I mean, it was such an easy venue to play. They have a real nice house kit that you set up and play, and it was awesome.
And how long do you guys, like, how many shows are we talking in Florida? Like, if you do a run down
there? We do usually 2 weeks, and it's nice. It's a show almost every night. Man. Yeah.
Dude, that's fun. And they put you, or you get put up, or you guys kind of book it yourselves?
We stay with some friends down there. We have a huge contingent of people who used to live in Delaware that now have retired down there or have second homes down there or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, so we stayed kind of in a bunch of different places. There's a couple of venues that put us up. And then, you know, for one of the nights or two of the nights, we stayed in like an Airbnb. Yeah, it's largely like we're pretty well taken care of when we get down there.
And you guys van it down there? Or?
Yeah. We just rent a Ford Transit van.
It's three of you. I mean, that's nice, perfect.
Well, we go down with four. We've got our buddy Nick, who he's our sound engineer.
Gotcha.
And he's just a road guy. And I mean, he's an animal.
You need him.
That guy. Yeah, the tour starts. We play every year. We play at the Big Chill Surf Cantina. We do a Tuesday night. We finish the gig. We drive back to BJ's house. We pack all the stuff in the van. Nick gets a pack of cigarettes and a few Red Bulls and drives to Florida.
Incredible.
Like we leave at like 11, 12 that night, and we get down at 5 or 6 the next day.
I love that guy.
He just cruises, man.
That's where Dave is.
Yeah. There's another little bar down there that I think you guys played at in Goodland.
Yeah, Little Bar.
It's called Little Bar.
It's called Little Bar.
And where are these bars? Like Miami or Fort Lauderdale or Bradenton?
Boca.
We're all over the south part of the state. So the first gig was in Ormond Beach, just north of Daytona.
Right.
We got friends there, and they hooked us up with a venue that does blues, and we played there. And then we went down, we did... we did Little Bar, and then we went to Key Largo. We played a show on Key Largo. That show is awesome.
I was going to say, how's that?
Caribbean Club. That place is great. I mean, the stage is on the beach.
And
it's on like the golf side, so it's like a sunset thing while we're playing. It's just beautiful.
And you are bringing your drums to each of these shows?
Yep. Okay. I travel with the kit. Then we were in like Cape Coral, Fort Myers. Then we were across the state in Boca. And then we're like back over or we're in Jupiter, and then we're like we're in Naples, just all across like South Florida, just kind of ping ponging.
So do you play music full time? Do you have a day job?
I don't have a day job anymore. No, I quit the day job about a year and a half ago.
Nice.
Yeah, I was I worked in the brewing industry for almost 13 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I worked at Heavy Seas Brewery.
Well, so that's awesome, man. I mean, so you're living the dream, baby.
Like, yeah, it's a dream and it's a nightmare all at the same
time. Yeah, yeah, no, I get it.
It's really great, but, you know, I mean, the reward of it is so much more. I mean, there's a beauty in the instant gratification, like as soon as you finish the song and everybody claps and everybody's having a great time.
Sure.
And like giving that feeling to people, you know, making someone's weekend, you know, the people that come to the Cult Classic New Year's show talk about it all year and can't wait to see it again.
Yeah.
So like that's a thing that we can offer people, and that's really exciting. I think, you know, the job I had previously was a very rewarding job. You know, I was a I did everything you could do at the brewery, but mainly I was the creative director. I designed, you know, beer labels and nice. You know, all that kind of stuff. So I could literally see my art on shelves, and there's a lot of gratification of that, but it's not the same.
It's got music.
And it's not directly interacting with, you know, people, and there's just something magical about that.
Yeah. That's good stuff. Let me ask you this. Are you a lover of movies?
I do. I love movies. I find myself, I watch a lot of like cartoon shows. That's what I really like. And I definitely like movies.
Are you saying Aqua Teen Hunger Force style or like South Park?
Like Rick and Morty.
What an incredible show. Yeah.
I love Big Mouth. Show is amazing. I think Big Mouth should be required viewing for any middle schooler. Like,
who's my boy? Nick
Kroll. Yeah. His brilliant. Voice acting is amazing. I like voice actors. I think it's such a cool thing.
It's a weird art. It is.
Yeah. When I was a kid, you know, that's all I did. I didn't have any friends, so I just sit around my house and make weird noises.
Right,
you know, and
right.
Watch, you know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Pee-wee's Playhouse. You know, that was like my world. So it was like all this like weirdness. So,
what was the first movie you can remember seeing in the theater, and did it affect you, like spiritually, if you will?
I'll say the movie that I remember having the most effect on me. I remember seeing some movies, you know, when I was really, really young, but. When I was a little bit more, I could understand plot and everything. The movie Jurassic Park.
Oh wow!
Seeing that in the theater was completely and totally mind blowing,
life changing.
But I loved Jurassic Park, and the thing that really struck me was how moving the music was with the score. It was so perfect. The score was so good. Mm-hmm. John Williams, obviously, just a complete and total genius. The soundtrack to everyone's lives. It's amazing. And I'll tell you one thing that is, I highly recommend this is a plug for the BSO. They do the film series with the BSO plays the score while the film is happening.
I've seen one of those at Oregon Ridge.
Yeah. I've been to a bunch.
I saw Amadeus with the BSO. Oh, very cool. It was fucking unbelievable. Yeah. I took my wife and it was right before COVID.
So this past year, me and Lincoln went to the BSO and we went to the video game.
Yeah.
Like it was all so night.
He's texting that kind
that's
of
another
thing.
Thing too. So good. Like, people don't understand how good video game music is.
Oh yeah.
That's another early influence for me. I mean, I grew up, you know, with the Nintendo, the original Nintendo. And I mean, like, the soundtracks to some of those games are just outrageously good.
This is going back to drums a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to segue into something else for you about the most magical place I've ever been to, Shellville.
Oh.
Have you been there?
No, this guy keeps talking about Shellville. So, tell me, what are we talking about?
We went down to Shellville this year to see Sweet Lita. Me and Amanda and the family. Okay. We took the whole family. The kids went to this, and Sweet Lita was playing.
I mean, is this
It's a Christmas village, and it's impressive. I mean, it's wild.
It's unlike anything I've seen. It's sort of like... have you ever been to like a German Christmas village? Like a German
style? Yeah, like, yes.
It's like all the little huts and
stuff. Right.
It snows.
Yeah, there's
the whole time.
But then there's also like, there's like a Christmas tree forest, and there's like a giant like roller skating rink in the center that looks like an ice skating rink. Yep. And there's like all of these food vendors, and
interesting fact about all those Christmas trees. You know, they're all planted.
I didn't know.
They're not just sitting there. They're permanent. They're planted where they are.
And where is this?
Rehoboth.
Okay. Yeah. Rehoboth. It's like, it's a block off of Coastal Highway.
It's the Shell Brothers. Like, they like own Rehoboth, apparently. Yeah. They have a obstacle course where you have snowball fights with these like whatever they're made of snowballs.
A lot of those end up on the stage.
So,
I
got to witness and kind of share in the experience of something interesting where they have house music playing the whole time, like through speakers throughout this whole place.
Right.
Yeah.
Christmas music. Christmas music. So, and you can sip hot chocolate, spiked hot chocolate. There's a bar where they play. So we can hear as the audience, we can hear the house music, but I'm focused on the band. Like, I love the band. Jamie's starting to lose his mind a little bit, and come to realize there's a speaker right behind his head on the other side of basically the curtain.
Yeah.
It never stops
through
their whole
God.
Set.
Yeah. And it's loud. It's not like it's not like, oh, it's just like quiet Christmas
right, you
music.
Can't
it's
like tune it out.
Blaringly loud, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's going,
So my question, it's just
it's Christmas music.
It's Christmas music. Right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we stop playing and like, there's Mariah Carey.
Dude, that's I asked Word about it. He's like, Jamie's listening.
Yeah, man. Jamie had a rough night.
But I'm like, how can you even focus that's happening?
It was tricky. I mean, we would have sections of songs that normally we bring it way down, and we couldn't do it. You know, it's like, all right, well, we have to keep the intensity high just to drown out the house music.
It's too distracting.
Yeah, it was pretty weird.
Right.
Luckily, so I did that with Lita, and then like 2 weeks later, I did Shellville again with Lowercase.
Oh, did you?
So I played it twice last year.
Same music, rocking.
Yeah, same situation. But luckily, going into that, I knew ahead of time. So right. I told the boys, I was like, hey, guys, this is the deal. And Jake was like, well, I could just cancel it. We don't have to do it. And I was like, well, I think if we know going in, you know, we just have to know. And it really wasn't too big of a problem.
The second time,
because we knew about it.
If you're mentally prepared, you can get over a lot.
But
you
know? Not knowing ahead of time and just walking into it and was like, can someone turn this off? What is happening?
What a weird problem to have.
Right. Like, to be clear, it's not a knock on Shovel because that place is great. But for bands,
sure.
it's terrible.
Well, you just figure we send men to the moon. We got to be able to fix this problem here.
But it didn't affect the performance for us as listeners.
We talked, like I talked with Jay. And I was like, I know where the speaker is, so like we can get a ladder or like jump on your shoulders.
We can go rogue on
and
this
pull
bitch.
That plug if we need to.
Right.
You know, we got through it. It really wasn't that big of a deal, but it was pretty fun.
That's challenging, man. I mean, that's definitely challenging.
Jamie had a really really hard time. Jamie's having a rough day. He had a hard day at work that day, so he was a short fuse to begin with,
right.
and then that was going on, and then there were some other things happening, and it was a lot.
I find that with those kind of gigs where it seems like it's mayhem, and you're just like it just doesn't seem to be working, or it feels like work.
Yeah,
when it doesn't feel like you're in the zone. I swear, every time I have a night like that internally, I get off the stage and somebody's like, you're playing best you've ever played. Yeah. And I'm like, are you shitting me?
Yeah.
But they're not.
Are you at the same show?
Right. And it's like, I don't know what that is. It's like, we're our worst, you know, critics. It's like,
always.
Like when even this guy, Jamie, had a rough night, but Woe Davis is like, dude, it was a fucking best show.
I told him, I couldn't even really hear it. They could because the speaker was right behind them. Us, like it's off in the distance. So we can hear it, but it wasn't affecting us.
Right.
Listening, we were like, this show's great.
Right. Yeah.
But then every time they took a break, I'm like, dude, how is that? How are you playing? Like, is that driving you nuts?
It was difficult. It was really the start of songs and the quiet parts of songs.
Right.
Sure.
Because you could really lose time quick.
Yeah. Oh my God, I bet.
It was
especially if there's like if it's close to what you're doing, or you know, it's like if it's totally different and you hear it, it doesn't affect you much. But if it's near your pulse.
And I was in a better position than those guys were because I use in ears.
Nice.
And so, like, I was had a little bit of isolation from it.
Right.
If it wasn't that time of the year, maybe Jamie's head would have exploded. But everybody was still in the Christmas spirit. Yeah. So we got through it.
And it's comedic now to Jamie. It's all of us. But I mean, in the moment, it was
great.
Pretty tense.
I mean, I witnessed it. It was great.
Tristan, a part of the show is kind of our. We're trying to bring a positive light to Baltimore and as much as we can. There are negatives in Baltimore, but there's a lot of good shit in Baltimore.
Yeah, sure is.
And there's a lot of good people who aren't afraid of Baltimore. And there's a lot of people who live in Baltimore who are just fine. You mentioned you live near the city or around the city or whatever.
I live downtown, yeah.
Nice. What are your vibes with the city? I mean, again, we all know that there's problems, but you play a lot. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Like, do people come see you from the counties a lot, or are they fearful?
Sort of a mixed bag, sure. I have some friends that have no issues coming into the city and seeing shows. They've been doing it for years, so they're never going to stop. And then there's definitely some folks that are a little more skittish of the city. I think it really just kind of depends on how much news they watch.
Yeah,
that's kind of what it comes down to. I found that the people that don't really pay attention to the local news, the nightly news, don't have the same level of fear about the city.
Absolutely.
And I live in the city, and I don't watch the news, and I have a great time in the city.
Right, yep. Right.
I think that there's just, unfortunately, you know, whether it's ill intent or not, I think in our media that people take in, it just focuses on negativity because that's the easiest thing to spread and to get people to watch. And that's unfortunate. You know, it's funny, I'll talk to my parents and they're like, did you hear about that thing that happened down the street? And I'm like, I don't know anything about it. You know, I live like two blocks from where that supposedly happened. I don't know that that actually happened. Right. It's really weird. You know, it's a very strange thing. I'm not saying that they're lying or anything like that, but I'm just saying it's tends to be a misrepresentation for
right.
me. I've lived downtown. I live three blocks north of Lexington Market, if you know where that is.
That's
in the city. And I've lived there for 10 years. And I absolutely love it. It's a beautiful neighborhood. I live in a neighborhood called Seton Hill. Yep. It's just west of Mount Vernon. It's right across from this beautiful park, St. Mary's Park. It's where they do the Baltimore Bike Party, if you guys are familiar with that. And it's great. I can walk to the, you know, to the Hippodrome. I can walk to the Meyerhof, you know, the Lyric. You know, we walked down to see Stavi do comedy at the Lyric. It was amazing.
Nice.
We in a dream world, we want him.
Yeah, oh my God, that guy is, dude, he's amazing.
He's firing on all cylinders.
We're trying, man.
He is solid gold, and he's so funny, and he's just.
And he is straight Highland Town.
Man, he is just on a trajectory
now.
I love to see
well
him.
Well deserved. Well, that's what, you know, he's hilarious.
Yeah,
dude.
He's great.
And cats like you guys down there, you know, doing it is good shit.
Yeah, and I love doing the gigs down in Fells. You know, Fells is great. And, I mean, I'm playing there tomorrow night with Gina DeLuca. We're doing the duo thing at Rye, so that'll be really fun, where Leadbetters used to be.
So, Tristan, how many bands are you in? Level with me.
It's like around 10, 12, something like that.
Oh, wow.
I see. That's okay.
Awesome. Yeah, and it's not, I mean, the main two are Sweet Lead and Lowercase.
It fascinates me that you could just sit down and just play with somebody. Like, I mean, like, going back to the story you told about Lowercase, where you just sat down.
That's an incredible story. That's a great story.
But it seems like that seemed to be something that you could do. But he like tells me, he's like, it's not like, not every drummer can do that.
Well, my joke when I meet new musicians and people that I'm playing with for the first time, and it's absolutely fact, but it sounds funny. Like, I am at my most comfortable when I have no idea what's happening.
Absolutely.
So, like, if I have no idea where this song is going or what is going on, I cannot possibly screw it up. Because whatever I play is going to be right in my head.
It'll work. Right.
And it'll work.
That makes sense.
Because, like, you guys all know how the song goes. And if I don't, like, you guys are going to help me somehow.
Sure.
And, like, we'll get through it. And I have enough intuition to know that, like, okay. I play guitar. I play bass. You know, I play some other instruments. So I know, like, what a leading chord sounds like. I know where something's going. I know when we need to pick it up. We need to, you know, and I play with a lot of musicians who are very good communicators, whether that's musically communication or whether it's visual, you know, or hand signals or whatever it takes. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple, you know, and what you do is if you don't know what's going on, you just hold it down.
Right. That's the thing.
Don't
remember
stop.
The job.
Yeah,
right.
Don't stop.
Keep time.
Just hold it down. Yeah, that's
keep
all you got to do.
Good time.
I think
remember
one of
the
things,
job.
Yeah, I think one of the things that has been an asset for me is the listening skills and being able to listen to musicians. And the reason I get calls and people want to work with me is largely because, well, one, I show up on time. I got my own gear. I've got good transportation, reliable transportation. All the basic things are there.
Sure. You take it seriously.
I take my drums very seriously. I make sure my drums always sound really good.
Right.
You know, I make sure that everything looks good. I make sure that I'm dressed for the part. I make sure that all these things are there. But I also learn all the songs, you know? So I play with Sweet Lead and Lowercase. I just started playing with a guy named Mark Hopkins, who's a fantastic guitar player.
I've heard the name, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic guitar player, great songwriter, great singer. And he and I are like kind of cut from the same sort of jam bandy kind of cloth. So he's really into a lot of the same stuff that I'm into. He's got a bunch of great original music. He's got a ton of stuff on Spotify. He actually has a really great podcast too to check out.
Oh, nice.
At Home with Mark. He does like a bunch of really great interviews with, I mean, top tier musicians. It's
good.
It's awesome.
All right. Well, that's
cool. And he's a great guy. So I play with him a lot. I used to play with Ruben Montoya a ton downtown. He's fantastic.
I feel like I know that name.
Yeah, I played with him a lot until I started getting a lot more gigs with Sweet Lead and Lowercase. I'd love to do some more gigs with him. He's a wonderful human being. He's great to work with. And Paul Lewis is the bass player in that band. And then I play with just a bunch of random Fells Point musicians from time to time.
Just gun for hire type stuff. They'll call you and be like, "Hey, next Tuesday, can you do it?"
Yeah. I've got a little trio with, Gina DeLuca and Matt Everhart. Matt Everhart plays, bass, and he plays with like Speakers of the House and, great band. Oh my God. If you like Steely Dan, check that band
out. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Holy I know God. That name. Yeah, they're great.
And the talent in that band is unreal. And, so that band is called, Naked Amongst Friends.
Nice.
And then I play with, a lady named Alana Florio, who's, another bass player downtown. And we do a trio with Gina DeLuca, and Gina's a fantastic songwriter. She's great.
Yeah.
She's incredible. She and I become really, really good friends in the last couple of years.
Wait a minute. You know Matt Everhart.
Yeah, Matt.
So the Woodshed.
Yes.
Rachel Hall Band.
Yeah. Plays.
He was the stand-up bass player.
Yes. No shit. I just saw. You just sent me pictures of it.
Yeah. Matt's great.
He's great.
Wonderful.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's a great player. He's like my favorite bass player.
Yeah.
He's
amazing. It was awesome. Wow, it's not often that you go to a show, a small, intimate show,
right,
and see a dude with a stand-up bass.
Oh, man. It's a whole vibe. He's great. Dude. I love that.
Yeah, it's cool. And that little trio that we have has kind of evolved. The first gig we played, you know, he was playing electric. The next gig, he was like, "I'm going to bring my fretless and see how that sounds." And he brought that, and I was like, "Dude, the fretless is working." And then the next time he just showed up with the upright, and I was like, yes.
It's on, man. It's on.
There's some tunes I'm playing some brush stuff on, and like it's just working really well. It's really fun,
awesome,
you know,
man.
And like it's fun to like diversify, and that's cool. I mean, that we do, you know, it's all kinds of fun covers and some of Gina's originals.
That's what I was gonna ask. Are most of these bands cover bands, or are they kind of mixed?
Yeah, there's a mix. So like the Alana Florio thing, that band is called Bad with Marketing, and we do
that's a great
much,
name. It's an incredible name.
Well, we had no idea what to call ourselves, and well, we don't promote ourselves very well.
It's
so
perfect.
There it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's mostly covers for that gig, and you know, stuff that people at the we do Sunday nights at the Cup. You know,
right.
People want to hear covers and songs that they can dance and sing along to. Mm-hmm. So we do that kind of thing, and with Gina and Matt, there's a smattering of some originals, but it's a lot of covers. But you know, they've become our own take on them now. As we played more. You know, we're doing Seven Nation Army with the upright.
I love that.
It's cool. Yeah. And we're doing it really, really slow. And she's doing it like sultry.
Nice.
And like, you know, it's
a different vibe.
It's a real cool vibe. And, you know, I mean, he gets into he pulls out the bow in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And
yep.
He calls that his distortion pedal, you know. It's like,
it's so cool.
Yeah. He's
so
a great player.
Glad you brought that. I had no idea that you guys played together, but
yeah.
I was just telling, that's what I said in that picture. I was like, it's not every day you see a stand up bass.
Right.
Yeah.
Schleho.
Oh my God, it was
Schleho
my favorite.
Had a stand up bass. That's a jam band from back in the day, they always had a stand up bass. It was badass.
Oh, well, we can speaking of the jam band, so back to the YouTube, you did a lot of Fish.
Yeah, I did
so
some
you're
fish
a
stuff.
Fish fan, I take it.
Yeah, I mean, my main squeeze in middle school was the Dave Matthews Band, and that was sort of the intro to sort of tiptoeing into the jam band scene. Mm-hmm. And through the Dave Matthews Band, their record, Before These Crowded Streets, is like my favorite record, and they had all of these guest musicians on it.
And Trey
wasn't actually on it, but they had Bela Fleck played banjo on it. And I was like, this is really interesting. Like banjo on this rock record, and it was really interesting sounding. And so I started looking into his music, and I found the Flecktones and Victor Wooten and all of these other like just exceptional musicians, like another level past the Dave Matthews Band. And so then I was like, oh, okay. And then I remember I got like the DVD of like the first Bonnaroo. And then I saw the Trey Anastasio Band horn section, and I was just like, whoa. And at that time, I was starting to really get into Zappa. And so all of these worlds were kind of colliding. And I had tried to get into Fish when I was in like high school, and it never really clicked for me for whatever reason.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And but it was sort of this backdoor approach, like through like the Zappa world.
I bet, right?
That I was like, oh, like everybody was always talking about these guys as like some Grateful Dead thing.
Right.
And they're not at all.
It wasn't that.
They're not. They were like so much more Zappa than they were Dead.
Yep.
And I mean, I started listening, you know, all the, you know, the compositional stuff right. that Trey wrote early on, you know, the David Bowie stuff, the
you enjoy you know,
Divided
myself,
Sky, Enjoy divided, Myself, all those kind of things. And I was like, oh, this is all this Zappa stuff. Right, like, this is great.
Right.
And I got into it in like 2001, 2002, and then really dove into it. Right. Saw him a bunch of times in 2003. I went to Coventry. That was
nice.
Oh my God. I'll try to keep this story brief.
Well, I'll do whatever, dude. Yeah. Yeah, don't matter.
My story from Coventry. So Coventry
was the that the Nightmare gig?
Yeah. Okay. So this was Phish in 2004 right. announced that they were breaking up
right.
for good.
Devastating.
Yeah. That was it. Yeah.
And
they were
going to
That's
the day the music died.
Yeah, they were going to do one last show all the way up in Coventry, Vermont, Newport, Vermont. Mm-hmm. It was 10 miles from the Canadian border. It was so far away.
Right.
I went up in a van with a bunch of my friends, and we get up there, and they have the whole thing is a disaster. The venue is rained out. The farmers' fields where they're parking cars, cars are sinking. People are getting stuck. They make a radio announcement. No one else can come into the venue, right. So people just start leaving their cars on the side of the road and walking to the venue. So we're like, well, what do you guys want to do? We ditch the car on the side of the road and we start walking. We walked 15 miles to get to this with our tent, all of our gear, everything. We get there and it's just total chaos at this event, you know, because all these people are upset. The band is still going to play. Like nobody can get there. Anyway, we go into the venue. We watch the first show. It's a 2-day festival. We go back. Best night's sleep of my entire life. I literally just like sank into a pile of mud. And just slept because I was so exhausted.
Right after a 15-mile trek.
Yeah.
Right.
And this is, I mean, I'm in college. I'm in the best shape of my life. I'm in great cross-country shape. I was running at Salisbury University. And the next morning I get up and I was like, I wonder if I could get back to the car, if I could bring the car up and like park it in one of these like people's front yards or something that are right next to the venue.
Right.
And so I went over and I talked to this guy and he's like, hey man, that sounds like a cool idea, man. Yeah, that's cool. Just give me $20 and you could park your car here. And I was like, cool, man, no problem. So I was like, I'll be back in like a couple hours. So I had my running gear with me. So I paid a guy like $5 or something to drive me to the highway. And they had shut down the northbound stretch of highway
right.
because they turned it into a parking lot. And so it's this big divided highway, big That's median crazy. In the middle of it. And so this dude drives me as far as he can before the road's closed. And I hop out and it was about 10 miles to the car from. And so I just ran down this completely empty highway.
Right, because the rest of the town
That's
knew
wild.
That Phish was there, so they weren't going to drive
everybody
on that road
bugged
anyway.
Out. Yeah.
Right.
And everybody just left, parked their cars
just
in the highway.
I mean, just as far as you could see. I mean,
that's
miles
insane.
And miles.
It was
miles
like the Walking
miles.
Dead.
So that's
yeah.
wild.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And I ran. I was running. It took me about an hour to run 10 miles down to like where the car, where I thought the car was. And then like,
uh-oh.
You're getting tired. Your brain's starting to play tricks on you. And you're going, did I run by the car?
Right,
did
I bet.
Did I miss it? You know? And I've got like the little clicker, you know?
Right,
so I'm
right.
like, I'm just like running. And every couple of minutes, I'm like clicking the thing. And then all of a sudden I hear, and I was like, oh my God.
Wow, dude.
There it is. I got in it. I drove up this empty highway that I just ran down. And then I got off and there was like a Vermont State Police guy that was there and was like, hey man, locals only. And I was like, hey, listen. And I told him the whole story.
Right.
I'm pouring sweat, you know,
right.
wearing all these, you know, it's in August. And he was like, oh man, you ran 10 miles? That's crazy. Come on through, man. Come on through.
That's awesome.
And I go up and
he was cool.
Yeah, then there was like another guy and it was like another roadblock. And then he was like, oh man, that's crazy. Come on through. The Vermont State Police were incredible. They helped
that's
everybody.
Awesome.
It was such a surreal experience.
Well, so
that's
but you
wild.
Parked it and it was all good.
I like, parked in the guy's front
Did you see
front
the 20? The guy with the 20 that
yeah.
you gave me? He was
yeah,
there.
He was
legit.
There. It was
right.
totally cool.
Nice.
We parked there. We went back in. We watched the second show. And then we literally, we had already loaded everything in the van. We were the first people to leave that show.
Incredible.
We
Lucky
walked
you.
Out like during the last song and just got in the van and no traffic, nothing.
That's
we drove
awesome.
Like, we drove back to my friend's house in Connecticut.
I'm so happy to meet you, man. I'm happy about the jam band stuff, especially. And also Lowercase Blues feels a little jam band.
Oh yeah, it's definitely like, yeah, those guys are very
and this is
influenced.
Before I saw that you were officially into jam bands. And but I'm listening to you going, holy shit, these guys are like, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah. I mean, BJ, the bass player, he's a humongous Phish fan. It's his favorite band. I mean, we're both gonna go to Mondegreen this year.
Dude,
I mean, it's right in
I'm chomping the
crazy.
Decade. I got two gig I'm broke.
I don't even know if I go out to Dick's because we have friends that live out
Dick's
in Colorado.
Awesome. Yeah, so BJ flew out there and did the whole run last year. Yeah.
So we usually do two of the four because I like it. I like doing the Colorado stuff.
Yeah.
It's so upsetting because I play Delaware all the time and it's like, they're right there.
Right there.
And my birthday is August 15th.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I can't say I'm not going with 100% certainty.
You'll go because you're a dick. You go to everything and you know, it's.
Maybe we'll get Fishman on the show.
It's amazing.
Yeah. We throw in some Fish covers every now and then with Lower
Is that
Kings.
Right?
Yeah, we've done a few.
Nice, man.
We used to do Wolfman's every now and then. We do Possum. Every now and then.
Oh, what
Possum's,
a slammer.
Possum's a lot of fun. And that's a fun song because, like, the people who don't know Fish, it's just a fun song.
Right. They jams. You know? Yeah.
People come up to us and they're like, what was that Possum song? Like,
right.
That was awesome.
Right.
It's like, it was a Fish song. They're like, what?
Right. They're like, oh, I don't like Fish. You're like, you might.
Yeah, you might.
Right.
They definitely have something for you.
I know. Right. There's something in there that you will like.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got, so we just finished up, recording a new album.
Is that right?
Yeah, Lowercase.
Where? What studio? Where out of?
We were in Milton at Mid-South Audio. Holy moly, what a studio. I mean, it is state of the art like I've never seen. It was incredible. I don't know how many millions and millions of dollars they put into this thing. Mm-hmm. Their main thing, Mid-South, is like live sound.
How many days in the studio?
We did 2 days in the studio.
Nice.
And did 10 songs.
Intense. Nice. 10 songs.
Yeah.
Intense.
It was kind of crazy. The issue with like a lot of the previous Lowercase records, which I didn't play on any of the previous records, there was always sort of issues with how the record sounded when it was done.
Right.
And it just, for some reason, none of those records really capture the magic of that band. The band's such a live band, you know. They play 5-6 nights a week,
right.
So like it's you got to see the band live,
right.
And none of that stuff really worked too well. That was our problem going to the studio, and we got into the studio and we worked with a great engineer, Frank Marchand, he's done a bunch of stuff over the years, but he did like some of the Senators, the Almighty Senators.
Oh,
he did
nice.
Some of their records back in the day. And he toured with them and was like live sound. And he does live sound. He's
Warren Bose.
Yeah,
Warren.
He was the stand-up bass?
No,
that
Mark
night.
He was the guitar player
with
Mark Everhart.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so we got Frank into the studio and, you know, he was like, I know what you guys are after, right? This is a live band, right? We're doing a live recording. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of, we want to get it. And he's like, all right, cool. And he just had this approach. I set my drums up. He was like, here's where I want you to put them. Like I was in the big open room. And he's like, I want you to put your drums, you know, back against this wall. So I have enough, you know, space to get, you know, some microphones, some distance. And he set this whole thing up and he goes, hit your kick drum real quick for me. And I hit the kick drum and he goes, damn, that sounds good. And I was like, oh man, that's cool. He like digs the sound. And he goes, I know what I want to use to mic it. And he like grabs a couple microphones and sets everything up. And he's like, I thought it was going to be, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours to get all set up and tuned in and everything. It's like 15 minutes. And he's like, I'm ready when you guys are. We had no intention on actually recording anything other than just like getting some ideas.
Right, right, right.
And Frank was like, you guys want to come in and hear something after a couple takes? And we're like, yeah. We go in and I was like, dude, the record's done.
Right.
It sounds perfect. Wow. And like, as soon as he played it for us, like I watched those guys' faces, both like,
that's
this
wonderful.
Is the sound. This is what it's supposed to sound like.
That's
and,
great.
And it all, and I don't mean this because I'm the drummer, but it 100% had to do with the way the drums were recorded, how they sound.
I believe
that drives
it.
The whole thing.
I totally
it sets the
it.
Full atmosphere. And he set up, I mean, this place, the room was huge and it was so, I mean, all asymmetrical walls, nothing, you know, no flat surfaces, facing
right.
flat surfaces, and so well laid out. And then these two doors at the end of the either side, he opened those up, and they had, like, vestibules in them that were, like, 15 feet high, and he put microphones all the way up in the top of those to get like this huge room sound.
I love those little weirdo audio guy.
Oh, he had it down. And it was, I mean, the whole thing was done. There's not a bit of fake reverb on the record. It's all natural reverb. He recorded it all and blended it in, and it just sounds, I mean, he made the drums sound massive.
Yeah, you're right. That is incredible. The difference between, that separates the men from the boys when it comes to like the sound. It's like if you can get that beef or that pop drum sound, it makes the record pop.
Yeah.
If it's flat, the whole thing's flat.
Yeah.
Because the drum, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's like, but because I got, you know, I've been in the studio a few times, and many of the stuff I've done is so flat.
Mm-hmm.
And two times it was a great recording. One of them was here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other one was Magpie Studios in Baltimore.
Yeah, that's a great room.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, I didn't even, I'm going to ask you, what kit do you play?
So I've got, my main kit is, it's a PDP kit.
Nice.
It's the Maple Classic. Wow. So it's, they're like the thin, I think they're like 6-ply maple shells, and they have the wood hoops, the maple hoops.
I noticed that on the pictures.
Yeah, and I just love them. They're incredible.
I've never played with wood hoops. Like,
they're great. And I was worried, and like a couple of people were like, oh, they're not going to hold up, you know.
That's
and like,
what I was
I hit
thinking.
Pretty hard, and so I was a little worried about the durability. There has not been an issue with them. And I was also worried about tuning, them holding tune. But then I realized, like, they hold tune better because the wood hoop expands and contracts at the same rate that the wood shell does, instead of having a metal hoop that doesn't expand and contract at the same rate that wood does. And they stay in tune forever.
Well, that's what I mean.
It's crazy.
There has to be some reason that a lot of great players go with wood hoops. Like, it can't be, you know, and that must be it, that it's probably more
practical. I love the
way
they sound. And they're so warm sounding. Right. I can get such a great tone out of them. I have so many people that come up to me after shows. One, they remark on, like, the kit looks beautiful. It's
right.
It's a gorgeous kit.
It is a gorgeous kit.
But, like, so many people who are not drummers come up and they're like, that kit sounds great. Like, those drums sound amazing. And a lot of it has to do with the snare that I'm playing and the way that I tune it and the way I tune my drums and everything. But, like, I'm like a real stickler for getting everything just right.
Yeah,
And I generally tune everything the exact same way. But if it's not working in a room, I tune to the room.
Right. That's smart.
You know, so that's a big difference.
So the Lowercase Blues album, when's that coming out?
Well, we just got the fourth revisions on the masters like 2 days ago, and I think we're there. So I think there's one song we want to make just a small mix change on, but I think we're pretty close to this thing wrapping up. So hopefully within like a month.
Are you going to do like an album release somewhere?
I would imagine so, yeah.
Here or down there?
I would imagine we'll probably do a couple. We'll probably have a cat's eye date where we'll do an album release in Baltimore, and then we'll do an album release, you know, probably at the Big Chill Surf Cantina.
I say you ought to do the run, like state to state down, the old East Coast tour.
Yeah, it would be a lot of
get
fun.
Get a couple street teams and shit like that.
We were hoping to have the album out for the Florida thing, but it was too much too fast.
Yeah, don't rush
it. Why? There was no reason to.
Right.
And we're so happy with how it was recorded. We want to make sure the master is the way we want it to be. And and this last revision is good. I actually brought a thumb drive with three of the songs on it. If you guys want to hear.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Get a little sneak peek.
Chris, do we? I say, well.
No, this is awesome.
Yeah, I would love to hear that.
So. Yeah, I'm really happy with it. And it was a lot of fun to work on that project, because there were some of those songs that we've been playing live for a while. There was a couple other ones that were like, oh, we have this idea for a song.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Let's try it. And then we ended up finishing writing, you know, the thing in the studio and recording it, and it was great.
Well, plus, if you have an experience like that where you walk in and nail it like that, you've got to press on and make that.
Yeah, you know, and that was the thing. Like, the idea going into the studio was, well, you know, we're going to try to see if we can get the sound that we're looking for.
Right.
And it happened immediately. And we had originally actually reached out and we had talked to Kelly Bell about possibly producing the record because he would be able to get the sound that we're looking
for. Right. He's got a great ear.
And when it happened so fast in the studio, we're kind of like, oh, man, we got the thing we were looking for.
Don't fuck around. You know, so it was like,
and working with Frank, it was so easy, and it was just already there. So we started recording it. We did 4 songs the first session, and then 6 songs the second session. And
2 days.
And that was it. Yeah, and there were 2 days a couple months apart. So, I mean, there was gear changes in between the two things. Damn. And it still sounds completely cohesive. And
you use your set in the studio, or did you use the studio?
No, I took my drums in.
Gotcha. Because, you know, sometimes those studios have nice ass sets.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's
like,
and they know and how to get the sound out of those.
Yeah, they do.
Sets,
they've got a Baltimore drum company set up down there. Yeah, shout out to Keith.
Yep, Keith.
I was actually there earlier today picking up heads.
We want to get him on. We're going to interview him.
Yeah, definitely, have Keith on. That guy's
like,
a legend.
Give me a break.
Yeah, he's the best. And he's such a great guy. I mean, he's amazing. We're all in a debt to his service.
Yeah,
we really are.
He's been around. He's been around a minute. Yeah. Well, man, it's been a real pleasure meeting you.
Yeah, it's been
and,
a pleasure.
You know, if there's anything else you want to plug.
Yeah. So I post like where I'm going to be playing often on Instagram. That seems to be the best place where I get the most feedback and traction. Mm-hmm. I'll post on stories or, you know, occasionally I'll post. But it's Tristanagram.
Nice.
That's my Instagram, Tristanagram.
That's perfect.
So you can find me on there or, you know, follow me on Facebook. That's easy. And if you want to check out the bands, you know, check out the websites, you know, sweetlita.com and check out lowercaseblues.net.
Right. And if you're in Florida, baby, keep your ear out or keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, every February we get down through Florida and hit a bunch of spots.
Well, man, I appreciate you. I feel good that I met you, and I'm definitely going to get out there to see Sweet Lita. Ward Davis is going to pay. It's going to be great.
There you go.
Yeah, he'll buy.
I will 100% treat you to a lowercase and Sweet Lita show.
Yeah, it would be an honor.
Preferably at the same time, because that'll save you money.
Right. And and again, like, you know, if you want to go in there, you can. If not, don't. But if you just want to groove.
Generally, for my listening pleasure, I encourage it.
It's hard for me to not walk by at least by drum set.
That's what I always feel. Yeah, but again, I don't want to put any pressure because it's, you know, some people,
I'd be more than happy to.
I love it. I love listening to it.
I know you love it.
Then I get to edit it, man. Then I get to mix it up and make it look good.
Well, man, just do us a favor and tell people, you know, that we're nice guys.
Absolutely.
And we're trying to be legit. And, you know, if they get a call that we're not whack jobs, I mean, we are wacky, but we're not dangerous. And we together want to bring good vibrations to Baltimore rather than, you know.
We're all artists, man.
Yeah, right. It is much appreciated. And I thank you guys so much for having me. It's an honor.
All right. Well, that's it.
Yep.
We're getting ready to melt faces here.
Yes, cool. We are.
Know, Sanity man. Out.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool.
Sanity Lounge is brought to you by Polyprops. Polyprops US specializes in the production and distribution of materials used in the creation of props and costumes, particularly in the cosplay and entertainment industries. For more information, visit www.poly-propsus.com. Use code HEXFLEX10 for 10% off your first order.
Thanks for listening, Baltimore. You can find us at www.sanitylounge.com or on Instagram at sanity.lounge.
Keep listening and subscribe.
Stay sane, Baltimore.